This episode is brought to you by VMGVinyl.com. Professional record cleaning, restoration, rejuvenation, and grading.
Refresh your records with VMGVinyl.com.
And with that, on with the show. Well, hello everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 423 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today I am very keen to share with you this interview I had with Mr. David Lowy. Now, David is a guy who lives many different lives, from businessman to aviator to rock star. Music fans will likely know David as the founder of the Dead Daisies, a rock band of rotating musicians of whom we've had various members on the show. Now, David is also son of Frank Lowy and part of the family that founded Westfield Corporation, who you may recognize from various shopping malls, real estate, philanthropy, and the like. And it's an incredible tale. David's dad, Frank, went from Holocaust survivor to one of Australia's richest men. And of course, David, his brothers, his family have been part of that business journey too. However, David's interest went beyond business to include aviation and playing music. Today, we talk to David primarily about the history and his involvement with the Dead Daisies, but we also talk a lot about how David balances the band with so many other competing and critical interests. I've really been looking forward to sharing this interview. I think there's something in it for everyone, record collector or not. And of course, if you're new to David and the Dead Daisies altogether, they've just released a Best Of album, which is a great place to start with the band. Dial up the Best of the Dead Daisies on your streaming services, and you could always order the vinyl at thedeaddaisies.com. It's an incredible package. Double LP, full color booklet, posters, splatter vinyl, the whole works. The Best of the Dead Daisies, available at your local record shop or from thedeaddaisies.com. And as mentioned, we've had several other members of the Dead Daisies on the Vinyl Guide, past and present members, including vocalist and former Motley Crue frontman John Corabi, episode 411, guitarist Doug Aldrich, episode 358, former Dead Daisy and vocal and bass legend Glenn Hughes, episode 257, former Dead Daisies and Black Sabbath drummer Tommy Clufetos, episode 272. We even had Mr. Dean Castronovo way, way back, episode 131 of The Vinyl Guide. And of course, we've had hundreds of other musicians and possibly future Dead Daisies members on the show as well. All episodes are available to enjoy anytime. Just follow The Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. And with that, let's begin our conversation with Mr. David Lowy about his life of rock and roll and beyond. Ladies and gentlemen, this week on The Vinyl Guide, I'm very stoked to have on the show David Lowy, who you probably know from the Dead Daisies, but he's also got a tremendously interesting background, which, again, I think we'll make our way all around the history, not only of David, but also the Dead Daisies. David, thank you so much for joining us today, mate.
It's a pleasure.
Now, we've had artists on the show who were successful in various areas of their life, not only music, but business and hobbies and that sort of thing. James Williamson of the Stooges comes to mind. I think he was vice president of Sony at one point, but he didn't really do those things simultaneously. When I look at all the different projects you're involved in, aviation, music, business, it seems like you are living a big life. How do you balance all of those things on a given day?
I don't sleep very much. It's look, it's quite complex. The balancing of it sometimes gets a little bit tricky, but I prioritize, I think. So if I'm on tour with the band, other things, I don't do any aviation on a tour. Occasionally I might fly the band, providing there's been no gigs a few days before, a few days after. So I sort of put that on the back burner. I'm still able to conduct my business because, especially with technology today, you can do things remotely as we're doing right now. You're in Sydney, I'm in New York. I don't know. I just seem to have a capacity to be able to do it. It's the type of business that I manage, which is an investment business, it's not like running an operating business where you manufacture something or you have lots of clients or you buy something one day, sell it the next. It's more of a intellectual pursuit that requires a lot of research and groundwork. So you can do that with a team based in one place, and you can be in another place. And I just managed to be able to fit it together, sometimes better than others. But it's a challenge. But I don't like there's no time to waste. All we have is time. There's nothing else. So you don't want to waste it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Now, do you ever find yourself kind of playing on stage and your mind kind of wanders to currency exchanges or anything like that?
Never on stage. No. Well, one of the things I love about music that's different, both to, especially to aviation, is music is in the moment. And where if you're flying an aircraft or if you're managing a business, it's all about what's going to happen in the future, not what's happening right now. And they're diametrically opposed. You can't, if your mind's wandering while you're playing a gig, well, it's either not a good gig or something's not right or you're not right. So that's the thing I love about music, recording or writing. It's all in the moment, whereas everything else in life, you're always thinking about what's next or, you know, what could happen tomorrow or what could happen the day after. Or when you're flying, you're going at 8 miles a minute, so your brain has to be 8 miles ahead of where you are because it all happens very quickly and you don't want to be unprepared. But music's completely different. That's what I love. One of the things I love about it, it's in the moment.
Mm. But I imagine you're probably in various business meetings thinking of music sometimes.
I don't know. I think actually I haven't really thought about it that much. And I think what's coming to mind now is how do I do it? I just must have this capacity to be able to focus on what I'm doing there and then in the moment and not let my mind wander to the other things.
At what age did you recognize that you had a real connection to music?
I was, my parents went on a holiday to Japan. And I think I was about 8 years old and they brought back a transistor radio and that was it for me. Used to listen to, firstly, my mother played the piano. And so I learned piano from the age of 10 for a period of time. So I was always exposed to music and there was always music being played in the house, classical music. My mother would be maybe playing the piano where there were classical records on. And I remember growing up to 78s of children's stories with classical music in the background of the stories. So I think my mother, without really knowing it, influenced a lot for me. But I remember getting my first transistor radio and hearing pop music at the time on the radio, and I was just enamored by it.
I guess that resulted in probably you starting to get quite a few records around the house. Were your parents supportive of the non-classical music or the non-children's music? Have you started bringing in some rock and roll in the house?
Well, they weren't against it, but the first record I ever bought was an Easy Beats record. Mm-hmm. I was 10 years old. I saved my bus money, walked home about 3 miles one day after I'd saved. I walked quite a bit, saved the money, bought my first single. It's an Easy Beats record. The A side was She's So Fine. I think it was 65. And the B side was Come and See Her. And I remember the opening line of She's So Fine as I think Stevie Wright was his name, the singer. Mm-hmm. There's a gigantic scream comes out at the beginning of the album. And I remember turning it up at home, putting it on really loud, which did annoy my parents with that scream that came out of the little 45 record player I had.
But they were supportive. They saw this as an interest. Yeah. And yeah.
They saw it as an interest. They weren't against it. Once I had a bit of a garage band as a teenager. I played bass, and they weren't supportive of that. It wasn't the reason why I stopped, but they weren't really keen on me hooking up with some other people, getting a combi van. You know what a VW mm-hmm. combi van, loading up with gear and going out and doing gigs instead of being at school and doing my schoolwork and studying and things like that. So,
Was that a bit of a difficult
long
balance?
Time ago.
Was that a bit of a difficult balance, like balancing their expectations and maybe some of your desires at the time?
Listen, for most people, balancing the expectations of parents and your own desires, I think, is a universal theme. Especially, I mean, I think we're probably close in age, especially for you know, baby boomers, post-war babies, where parents went through pretty tough times. My father is a Holocaust survivor, actually, from Europe. Yeah. And parents' expectations and kids' desires are things that don't always meet in the, don't always meet in the middle.
So at some point you focused on school. Were you still doing bands in the background as you were kind of building your education?
I stopped. We, you know, I had this garage band I played in, and we weren't very good. Did a few gigs, and I had to focus. I did focus on my stuff. I was not a good student until I actually managed eventually somehow to get into university. But that was actually quite a struggle for me, high school. And but I certainly couldn't have done that and played music. But sometimes I wish I would have continued with it. In the end, I did it anyway. So in a way, I guess I've lived my life in reverse.
Well, let's just say it's all worked out okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't change anything, that's for sure.
Yeah. So at what point did you start to re-enter kind of your musical interests and start to take them quite seriously?
Well, I was it was just before it was late 1999, and I hadn't played music probably since the mid 70s, and I was walking through the city of, I was living in Sydney at the time. I was walking through the city, and I walked past a music shop, and I just saw this guitar out the corner of my eye, and I just thought, well, great. You know, I went in the shop, I bought the guitar, took it home, started to teach myself to play it, and started to learn some songs. And at the New Year's Eve is actually my birthday, and at the millennium, from 99 to 2000, I had a party, and I got this band to come and play, and I just started playing the guitar, and I asked them if I could play a couple of songs with them. And they said, can you play? I said, well, not really, but I'll give it a go. Give me a song list. So they gave me their list of songs. I picked out four or five songs. I figured that I could get through, learnt them, and they said, we'll do a rehearsal. So I did a rehearsal with them. They said, okay, try these four or five songs. And I did, and I remember plugging in my guitar and playing the first song with them. I said, this is really good. I'm going to do this. This is really something worth pushing at and doing. And that's when I actually started again to play after not playing since I was a teenager. And from that, I started a cover band. It's quite a long story. We need a lot longer than this podcast to tell the whole story, but started a cover band, did a charity gig for Alzheimer's. There were a number of big Australian rock stars involved in this charity. The person who was assigned to me was Doc Neeson from the Angels. And that started my friendship with Doc, and that actually started me doing it in a serious and professional way.
Okay, so it from the 80s into the 90s, you were really not part of the music scene, right? I mean, you're still going to shows, listening
not at
to
all.
Music probably as a
I did. I did, but I was not playing. I wasn't in it. No, I just, it was the, I don't know what happened. I walked past this music shop, bought this guitar, and it just sort of never had a plan, actually. And just followed my instincts, I suppose, and practiced a hell of a lot. When I look at some earlier videos and listening to my playing, it's, luckily for me and the people around me, it's improved. So,
so yeah. you start playing with Doc Neeson, and Australians are very familiar with Doc from his work as with the Angels. The Americans may know him from Angel City, but Doc is an absolute legend in Australian music. So you got connected with him. That was a fantastic meeting. How did that parlay into doing a project with him?
Well, at the time I had this cover band, and I struck up a friendship with Doc, and he was a wonderful human being. He was a really good-hearted soul for sure, and we were quite friendly, and we played a couple of Angels covers in this cover band I had, and I was just chatting to him about it. He said, "Oh, I'll come and sing them for you. I'm not doing anything right now. The Angels have split, and I don't really want to go back to them." And I said, "Really? Would you do that?" Fantastic. So he did, and we played a few Angels songs, and then he said to me, "Listen, do you think you could write some music? Because I'd really like to do something new. They've been doing the Angels, and around 20 years by then, or maybe even more. And I actually was more than that. And I said, well, I haven't done it before, but let's try. And so I had a few, I always played around with a few riffs and things like that. We sat down together, played in my riffs. He added some other things to them, and together we actually did write some songs. And then we decided to record them and then put a band together, and we called it Red Phoenix. Prior to that, we were doing gigs as Doc Neeson's Angels. The Brewsters and Doc had split, and Doc still wanted to go out and do some gigs. And Doc was still very friendly with Jim Hilburn, who was the bass player of the Angels in the 90s. And we put this band together. It was called Doc Neeson's Angels. And then once we wrote and did a new album, we said, let's create our own band, and we called it Red Phoenix. And we did one album. The problem was that Doc wasn't well, and when we started to tour, he really couldn't cope with it, and we were never able to really launch the album properly, and from then on Doc sort of slid downhill further, and ultimately passed away from a brain tumor, but which was very unfortunate. But I after Doc, I went on to do some other things, and in 2012 teamed up with John Stevens, and we started this project called Dead Daisies.
Now, how did the name The Dead Daisies come to be?
It was John Stevens chose the name. Why The Dead Daisies? John went for a health checkup one day, one of his heart checkups, and the doctor sent him from the checkup to the hospital, and he had an operation straight away, a heart operation, because most of his heart was arteries were blocked, and from the operation, I think he almost died. So he said, instead of the saying pushing up the daisies, instead of pushing up the daisies, it was the daisies that died. And so he said, let's call it the Dead Daisies. And I said, sure, okay. You know more about this than me. It sounds good.
Okay. So you were still a bit of a passenger at that point. Is that fit?
Yeah, I'm a passenger. Passenger is not the right word for it. I was a collaborator, but I believe in standing on the shoulders of giants. And that's been my strategy in everything I've ever done. And also, when you work with people who know more about something, or who are better than you at that thing, you are going to have to improve or get out, And so it was a huge challenge for me to work with John. But we wrote together. We wrote the songs together. He was far more experienced, obviously, than me. But we co-wrote many of the songs. Some were mine from the start. Some were his from the start, and some were co-written. Also, we had a very good producer that helped us put the album together. We did it in a very short time. But, as I said, I'm still friends with John, and got a huge respect for him. He is an unbelievably talented individual, singer, songwriter, performer.
Was the view of the Dead Daisies at the time, it's become almost a rotating cast of musicians.
Yeah.
At the time, was it kind of envisioned like that sort of project, or was it more of a band structure?
It was a band structure. Having said that, I always knew that, we weren't a bunch of 18-year-olds or 20-year-olds who pulled a few hundred dollars together and gone out as the start of our music career and band of brothers, so to speak. It couldn't have been that, because we were all 30 or 40 years older than that when we started, and everybody I've played with had already had careers. in music, and they wanted to do, the reason they wanted, the people were happy to join with me in the early stages particularly, was it's not something that I could do 52 weeks of the year. And so I think one of the attractions of playing was in the Dead Daisies was that, well, you know, people get bored doing the same thing, and even right at the top, doing the same thing over and over. And this was like a project during the year that would take 10, 12, 14, 16 weeks, whatever, of the year, where they could do something different than the rest of the time. And even John, when I started with him, he had his very solid solo career, and he was out doing solo shows whilst we were still also doing Dead Daisy shows from time to time and writing and recording. So the nature of it was that I could not commit my time in advance due to my other activities. And so I always knew that how am I going to manage this if I want to keep it going? I'm just going to have to accept that band members may have to change from time to time because that's the only way I can fit it in with the rest of my life and how it's going to work. On the negative side, it's fans don't like it for sure. I would have loved to have a band that was the same guys from start and you travel down this road together. And the negative of it, particularly for fans, is that it's not ideal. Having said that, on the plus side, it's fantastic for the creativity and the getting to work with different people, different ideas coming forward, different skills being learned. And, you know, life is about human relationships along the way. And, you know, long-term band members, it's a challenge. You see many of the big bands have changed their lineups over time for many different reasons. And particularly nowadays, the older band members, well, some of them just are not here. Others want to do different things. So it's just how it is. And I guess if I had my choice, it'd be great to have the same lineup all the time. But it's just, you know, I'd like to be 25 as well, but I'm never going to be that again.
You have these pillars of consistency. I mean, yourself, Doug's been in for quite a few years.
Doug, yes. Yes.
And I guess I'm a bit surprised that you say people really don't like the member changeouts because to me, it seems rather refreshing. Again, there's something to be said about getting some new blood and some new energy in.
Yeah.
But you're not going for people who are also completely off the radar. You're pulling in some significant names in the music industry. And to me, it's quite fascinating seeing what they contribute.
Yeah, I guess that you know, one thing leads to another. So how did I start down this track? I didn't start out in this track. We were in the first gigs that John and I did, we opened for Thin Lizzy. I think it was on the bill was Thin Lizzy, Motley Crue. Thin Lizzy, Motley Crue. Yeah, and we opened for Thin Lizzy and Motley Crue on a tour in Australia. And at the time, a guy by the name of Marco Mendoza was playing in Thin Lizzy, and he played in a lot of big bands. He played with Ted Nugent for a long time, and he might have even been in Foreigner for a while. He was in a number of bands, and we were looking for a bass player. And I met Marco at side of stage, and we had a rapport going together. He wanted to leave Thin Lizzy, and I said, "Are you interested in joining us?" He said, "For sure." I mean, John Stevens was a huge magnet for talent because when people hear him sing, even if they don't know him, they're just happy to perform with him. And through Marco at the time, actually, when John and I started, we didn't really have a band. It was him and I, so we were looking for people. And the drummer at the time was Charlie Drayton, who is the drummer for Cold Chisel now. I think he still is, isn't he? Charlie's an American. And we were looking for a guitarist, a lead guitarist. I play rhythm guitar and certainly couldn't have playing lead guitar at that time in this band. And he said, "Look, you know, Guns N' Roses are in Australia and they've got 3 weeks between gigs. I'm good friends with Richard Fortus. I'll give him a call, see if he wants to come and join us." And Richard, I said, "Great." And Richard said, send me the music. We sent him the music. He said, I love it. I'll come and join you. I've got 3 weeks and I'll come and join you. By the way, you're looking for a keyboard player. John really wanted keyboards. He said, yeah. He said, okay, I'll bring Dizzy Reed with me. And there you go. That's how I started with Richard Fortus and Dizzy Reed and Marco Mendoza. And through that contact, and then what happens, Guns didn't go back on the road following that tour. And so Richard and Dizzy stayed with me. I knew they wouldn't. I knew that the day would come where I'd get the call and say, listen, you know, Guns are going back out. And Axl and Slash have teamed up again. I just knew that was a matter of time. And maybe if that wouldn't have happened, that lineup might still be there. But in, I think at the end of 15, or maybe it was 16, I can't remember, but that's when Guns decided to go back. And Richard introduced me to Doug. That's how I met Doug. And I was never actually that keen to have keyboards as well, so I didn't bring another keyboard player in. And it was, and so yeah. It's been an incredible journey, unplanned, and but one thing led to another. I mean, we put a huge amount of effort. We try very hard. I mean, I practice every day, and you know, it's I don't believe in doing anything by heart. Everything in excess, as long as it's legal, and you're going to remember it, and you're not going to hurt anybody. Everything in excess. Why do anything in moderation? So, and that's how we got. And stand on the shoulder of giants.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's very clear. You want to see where it's going to lead. You want to give it your best shot and put as much energy into it as you can.
Yeah.
Are you still finding it like? Are you able to spend more time with the Dead Daisies now than you were in, say, 2013 or 14 when the band was just starting up?
It's about the same. It depends on what's going on at any point in time, about the same. I mean, I think I've averaged 6 months a year, actually, when I look back at it. COVID was a major challenge for us, and touring now is harder because there's so many bands out there now, and everyone wants to recapture what was lost during the COVID years. And every year you get, funnily enough, you get older. And so it's a challenge. And I think I've spent a bit less this year than last year. We'll see how things pan out. It depends on the opportunities that come up as well. Mm-hmm. What opportunities you come your way, what opportunities you make. You've got to be lucky. The ball's got to bounce for you, as they say, if it was soccer or tennis.
Well, you've got a good team around you that seems to help make the ball bounce quite well. In this the new album, the Dead Daisies, the Best Of. Normally, a Best Of is kind of a bookend. It's a milestone in a career. The Dead Daisies seem to be still going full steam. Why a Best Of now?
I don't do any of the management of the band or any of the marketing or any of that side of the thing. I stick to playing guitar and trying to write and record and perform as best I can. The management of the band thought it was a good idea to put this product out. Now, it's a marker of 10 years since we released the first album. I think it's nearly 60 original songs that we've done. There's been, three different basic lineups, and thought it would be a good marker for us to put out. And that was the decision that was made. And I said, sounds good to me. I'm happy to go. Happy to. If you think that's the best thing for us now, the fans want to see it, might hear it, might bring new fans. So that was the rationale.
How involved are you in like track selection or artwork? Or even vinyl manufacturing. Do you get involved in those sort of things?
We'll be back after these messages.
Well, hey there, record collectors. There's a new service available that specializes in record cleaning, restoring, sticker removal, and professional grading.
VMGvinyl.com.
VMG Vinyl can help you make the most of your collectible records. From professional cleaning of records and sleeves,
removing old price tags and store stickers,
dry cleaning and rejuvenation of old shrink wrap to make it look like new, even providing you a professional play-tested third-party grade with either removable grading or encasing in plastic, you have a wide range of choices at VMGVinyl.com.
Buying a highly collectible record and you want it checked out by an expert?
VMG Vinyl can do that too. Head over there now and see what VMGVinyl.com can do for you and your collection. That's VMGVinyl.com, the one-stop shop for professional third-party grading, cleaning, and record restoration. That's VMGVinyl.com. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. How involved are you in like track selection or artwork or even vinyl manufacturing? Do you get involved in those sort of things?
No, I don't actually. My involvement in the band is limited to playing in the band, playing guitar, writing, co-writing songs, writing or co-writing songs. The policy and the direction and the artwork's not my thing. I wouldn't be good at choosing it. In any case, you got to know what you're good at as well. You know, mm-hmm. You got to know what you're not good at, or what you're comfortable doing. So, I've got a very good team around me, and. I leave the decisions to them. It's like, if you're running a very large business, which I did a long time ago, I haven't done it for a while, you got to get the best people and let them do their thing. And I've really tried to do that in the Dead Daisy. So when I see the package when it's complete. That's how I like to do it.
Right. Because, being in organizations myself, I know that there are the leaders, you get a really good leader who knows how to staff the right way, get the right people in the right positions, and then give them what they need to play that role to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
The way I see it, and correct me if I'm wrong or if this feels weird hearing it, but your main contribution is that leadership and being able to see the potential in others. Is that fair?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it's just, I wanted to have, as I said, it wasn't a plan from the start, but I guess once I got into it, I thought, well, I can only do this the way I know it, the way I've done other things. And I know it's different than other bands. It's, I guess that's just that may have got us to where we are. It might limit us. It might be a limiting factor for the band that it's an unusual way to do this. And I think I see the super creative people that I've had the privilege to meet through this journey. I see they're different. They are different than most people that I've come in contact with, particularly in my business career or in aviation. I remember when I did it before I had the band The Dead Daisies. I had a band called Mink that we put out a pretty good album. I think wasn't able to go further due to circumstances, but I remember getting in the studio with everybody when we were doing the record, and it felt to me like we were just going around in circles. And I went and got a whiteboard and put down tracks 1 to 12. And I knew how much time we had in the studio, and I knew how much we had to achieve every day in order to get to the end. And I drew it all up, very proudly drew it all up before the other people walked in the studio. And the singer, who was very, very talented and creative guy, said, maybe this works in your office, but it's not going to work in the studio. It doesn't work like that. We can do a song maybe in 5 minutes, and some might take 5 years. So, you know, and that was a lesson for me. It's not formulaic. And I guess, when you're building physical structures, the business I was in was, you know, developing and building shopping malls, which is what my family's business was that I grew up in. And it is creative, but it's very process driven. Music should not be created that way. So I think, you know, the experience and skill set that I have has got us down this road, and it's good. But, you know, I've seen the real creative geniuses, and even the ones that are I know a number of creative geniuses that are not successful, but they're still creative geniuses. And to be successful, it relies on a confluence of a lot of events. The biggest factor is luck. You got to be incredibly talented, but you need to be lucky at the same time. So it's just been a very interesting journey for me, and this is how I've done it, based on my previous life's experiences. And, you know, to make something happen, you've got to go down doing it this pathway. But I'm not really sure it's the ideal way of doing music, but here we are.
Well, you need some sort of structure, I would think. You can't have complete abandonment and anarchy, and that must have been a very interesting moment for you, because your career up to that point had been based on, you know, moving things along, gaining efficiencies, getting stuff done. Of course, there are going to be some songs that aren't ready, and maybe they take years to write. But while those are happening, there's another dozen or two that you're working on, because you have to stay active. So I guess that learning that balance must have been an interesting lesson for you.
Yeah, I mean, I love learning new things, and this has been an incredible learning experience along the way. And of course, you make plenty of mistakes at the same time. If you don't make mistakes, you're not trying hard enough, they say.
Is there anything that you would like to see the Dead Daisies do that they haven't already done?
I'd like to be playing to larger audiences. I mean, we do for our own headline shows. I mean, we've had in Germany, we've got a very good following. We've played to, I think, 1,500 people of our own audience, our own headline shows. Of course, we've opened for many big bands. We've headlined at a festival in Poland where we played with a 60-piece orchestra, which was, I guess, I think the best experience I've had in music. We rehearsed with the orchestra for four days, and that was an unbelievable music experience to play with an orchestra, with a conductor, and then I think we're 85,000 people at the show. But I'd like to get the music out to more people and draw a wider audience. It's very, very, the structure of the industry today makes it incredibly difficult. And we are in a narrow genre of music. I mean, new classic rock is a pretty narrow genre of music. I'm very satisfied with the success that we've had, but to date, we've got fans all over the world. A lot of people listen to our stuff. We've had a lot of Spotify plays. We've sold a lot of albums, and we get good crowds at the shows. And when you see people singing back the songs that you've written, it's very, very satisfying. So, it just you continue on the journey, and success is not a destination. It's a journey. So we keep going down the journey.
Yeah, because you've had tremendous moments of your life. I mean, floating companies, doing aviation, aerobatics, being on stage. Yeah. I mean, you know, what thrills you these days?
I don't do the aerobatic flying anymore, competition aerobatics I did for many years. I've flown over 1,000 air shows. I don't do that anymore because, I actually had 21 friends killed doing it, and I thought, it's just a matter of time for me, and I'm not as sharp as I was. It's it I remember the last display I flew. I just felt when I was flying the display, I'm not as sharp as I used to be, and I've gotten away with this there, but for the grace of God, go I. So I landed from that flight and said, okay, I love flying, and I'm going to continue flying to get from A to B, but I'm no longer going to do this, to fly air shows and do aerobatics and very high level aerobatics competition style, because it's sooner or later it catches up with you. So,
you only get one mistake.
Where were we going?
What thrills you?
That is like, right.
Yeah.
Oh, what thrills me? So look, it's a thrill to be on stage when it's good. Not every gig is good though. And people think touring, if I know this is not a visual show, but if touring is this big, okay, the really good bit is this big. Okay. And the good bit is fantastic. But it's hard. It's hard on the road, and I know why people die young doing this, because it requires a lot of discipline to stay on the right track, and it's a combination, and it's hard going, and there's periods of a lot of waiting around in rock and roll, a lot of waiting.
I'm not sure who was on the show, but they said I don't get paid for the 2 hours on stage, I get paid for the 22 hours in between shows.
Yeah. Somebody said that to me.
Yeah.
That was said to me, and that's when it struck me. It was Daryl Jones said, we're fortunate enough to have Daryl Jones do 6 weeks with us, and he said that to me on tour when we were waiting around for something. So it's a lot of waiting around. Fortunately, I've got things to do while I'm waiting around. So. but it's hard. It's hard. Take my hat off anybody who's been successful in this game. That's for sure.
Now, over the course of time, you've been, not just a player of music, but also clearly a big fan of music. Do you collect any music memorabilia? Do you have any things that you chase? I was telling my wife today, it's like I was going to interview you, and she says, "Oh, is David a record collector?" I said, "I don't know, but I think he collects airplanes." What do you collect, David?
Well, I have collected a number of aircraft. Actually, I've donated them and created a museum out of it. And the aircraft from the museum I started belong now to the Royal Australian Air Force. I don't really collect guitars. I have a number of guitars. I'm not really a collector of things. I've got my record collection still. I've got a record player that I put my records on sometimes. It's interesting when you open up. I opened up one of the records the other day, and opened up an album, and I saw a friend's name in it. Obviously, it's a record I borrowed and never gave back to him. No, I'm not a big guitar collector, and I'm not a big big record collector. I seem to keep moving forward all the time, and I'm not actually not a collector.
Well, I guess you're on the road quite a bit. You're traveling a bit, so carrying the big records around with you is probably not too convenient. Do you have a really nice stereo? Have you just,
yourself to that? I have a nice stereo. I've got a nice record player. I love the smell of the records, not only opening up and looking, because the LPs, the old ones anyway, have a scent, actually. I've got a good stereo system. Interestingly, when I'm listening to music just to relax, I don't listen to rock music. I actually listen to Latin jazz. I've got a real thing about Latin jazz. Cuban jazz. We went to Cuba with the Dead Daisies, and it was such an eye-opener for me. It was in 2015 before Obama reopened up contact with Cuba. And
you guys were like the first one of the first bands first, to be able to play there, is that right?
Yeah, we're the first. I think Radiohead was previous to us, and that was in the early 90s. It was a long time, but it was an unbelievable experience there. And so I like to listen to Latin jazz, I listen to rock music in the car. And when I want to be picked up or something, or listen to things, and yeah, so I've got actually quite a broad musical mm-hmm. taste when it comes to listening.
So maybe one of these days you'll have a Spanish project.
I don't think so.
Las Flores Muertes.
yeah, the dead daisies. Even I understood that. No,
did you ever get into punk? Because in Sydney was a large punk town in the 80s. Did you ever catch bands like The Scientists or Radio Birdman or The Saints or anyone?
No, I didn't really. Although, you know, I guess, you know, still one of my favorite bands of all time is The Angels. Mm. And that was why it was such a thrill for me with Doc, because I was a huge fan. And I think that's, you know, some of their stuff is pre-punk, you could say. But I never really got into the punk scene. By the time in the 80s and 90s, I was not into music at all. I was very busy with my business career and not thinking about much else. I was flying, doing a lot of flying, but I wasn't thinking about music at all, actually. It just mm-hmm. all sort of came back to me.
Has your father ever seen a Dead Daisy show?
Oh yeah, he's been to a few. My father lives in Israel, and we played two shows. We've been there twice. Did a number of shows there, and he's come to see me. He's very proud, and I've played at a number of like most family functions. They get me up with the band, which I don't mind, which I love doing actually, and. So I've done a fair bit of that, and yeah, I've played at my father's birthday parties and things like that. He's 92, but he's still very active. 92 year old.
That's wonderful. So it's clear, you know, I see the social media posts. You guys are playing, the Dead Daisies are playing all over the world, all over the US, Europe, even some gigs in Israel. What are the odds we're going to see the Dead Daisies in Australia in 2024?
I think there's a reasonable chance. There's a reasonable chance. As I said, the opportunity has to sort of come your way. You can plan a tour all you like, but if the dates don't work, or the gigs don't work, or the venues are not available, or the promoter doesn't think it's the right time, or there's too many other bands coming at the same time, you know, there's a lot of factors come to play, and it's just that the stars haven't aligned for us to get to Australia.
Do you fly the plane like Bruce Dickinson, or do you got someone that does that on tour?
I don't fly and play at the same time. You can't. I can't anyway. It's the headspace is for flying is. I mean, if there's 3 or 4 days between shows, I would do the flying, but we don't. Typically, we do 3 or even 4 in a row, and then have a couple of days off, and that's not enough to get my head back into. Flying. I've flown with Bruce Dickinson. He's come out to the museum I created, and we've flown in a little fighter jet together and met with him a few times. There's a video of it actually. He's an interesting, very interesting individual as well. He loves flying.
There's a few rock and roll pilots. There's yourself, Bruce Dickinson, Dennis Tech.
Yeah, also from Deep Purple. The guitarist,
Steve Morse.
Steve Morse. Been flying with him as well.
Oh wow! Yeah. All right.
See, Steve Morse actually had an airline job for a period of time.
Had no idea.
Yeah, Steve Morse. He's more of he loves building aircraft as well. He's a very technical guy when it comes to the technical side of aviation. But I've been flying with him. He came out to the museum and we did some flying together.
Well, look, David. I really do appreciate the time you spent with us, and I do hope we figure out or your team figures out a way to get the Dead Daisies into Australia in 2024. I know Crab is talking about he's wanting to come down here, especially during the summer. I want to make sure everyone knows about the Dead Daisies' new Best of album. You can go to thedeaddaisies.com. There are links to be able to get it there. There's also links, which I found very interesting, to a reissue of the Red Phoenix Band. I think that is coming out on CD. I don't know if there's a vinyl copy getting ready to come out. I didn't see where that was happening, but
I don't know. That would be a good idea. Yeah, there are still fans of Red Phoenix. And actually, one of the things that I didn't mention is that one of the people that really helped me with my music career was Jimmy Barnes. He was very, very helpful. Before I started the Dead Daisies, I had a band called Mink, and we did tour in Australia. We opened for Jimmy a number of times, and he was like a mentored me a lot. Haven't seen much of him lately because I've been based in the US for quite a few years now, but he was very, very helpful for me. A debt of gratitude to Jimmy, wonderful human being.
Now, I know one of your mentors, the template that you followed is Malcolm Young. Did you ever spend any time with Malcolm?
No, I never got to meet him, unfortunately. I tried to, but it just wasn't the opportunity didn't arise. I went with FIFA Riccobono from Albert's Music. Mm-hmm. And she was trying to set it up for me, which I appreciate very much. But it just didn't come together. I would have loved to have met Malcolm. If people ask who do I look up to most in the music world, it's him. Mm-hmm. Genius.
Oh yeah, what a right arm on that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, David, thank you again, mate. And best of luck with everything you have coming up. We hope to see you in Australia at some point. And again, everyone, check out The Best of the Dead Daisies. It's out now. It's a gorgeous vinyl package, double LP, splatter vinyl, full color everything. It's got a full color booklet, a full color poster in there. The inserts are full color. TheDeadDaisies.com. David, thank you again for coming on The Vinyl Guide, mate.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. David sounds like a really good bloke. Really like the dude. Very solid. Feet on the ground, but man, he's got big aspirations and he knows how to get shit done, doesn't he? Again, want to make sure everyone knows about The Best of the Dead Daisies. Double LP, splatter vinyl, full color, incredible package, posters, booklets, the whole work. The Best of the Dead Daisies. Again, available at your local record shop or from thedeaddaisies.com. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hey, please do me a favor. Log into Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a positive review. 5 out of 5 or 10 out of 10 stars, whatever. Say something really nice about The Vinyl Guide podcast. Of course, you could always share it on your social media. That's hugely helpful. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.